And welcome to the game of the year, the one we've all been waiting for. There's a capacity crowd here. The conditions are absolutely perfect, with an atmosphere that's really electric. Now, the band's just leaving the pitch, and we're waiting for it. Yes, I think I can see them. Yes, it's the team. Here they come. Just listen to that roar.
You are listening to Four at the Back with Dan and Ken.
Yes, it's Four at the Back with Dan and Ken, episode number 6. On this week's show, the troubles of last year's MLS Cup finalists, the coaching carousel. Tim Holt of the United Soccer League drops by to chat, and we'll look at women's professional soccer after their first month of play. We want to thank all of you who have been with us so far, those of you who have been joining us lately. We appreciate it very, very much. iTunes subscribers to the show are up 8-fold over the start of the month.
Wow.
Hundreds of you are downloading on iTunes alone. You can get it through Ken.com. You can get it through Dan's blog on BigSoccer.com. So we appreciate all of you who do that. We would like to make a request, though. If you do listen to the show, and if you do like it, and we hope you do, just tell one person about it. Just email a link to a soccer fan you know. Turn somebody on to it. Tell them you like it. Ask them if they'll give it a tumble. We would really appreciate it. So you seem surprised, Dan, but 6 shows in, how do you feel about how it's going for us so far?
I think I'm doing great.
Well, we always knew that would be. You'd be carrying me. We knew that.
Yeah, I didn't want to say anything, but I'm holding up my end, okay? I'm taking care of what I need to take care of.
Okay, I'll keep trying.
Topic 1.
Oh, it could get worse yet. Kamala on the ground, and to finish it off is Pontius. An absolute catastrophe at the back for the Red Bulls. And Pontius prods it home into the empty net. And what looked like 3 points for the Red Bulls a couple of minutes ago has become zero.
This might go down as the worst loss in the history of this franchise.
That was the great Adrian Healy and my man Chip Messing on MSG after the New York Red Bulls gave up 2 goals in the final minutes at home Sunday to lose 3-2 to DC United. Dan, last year's MLS Cup finalists, Columbus and New York, are a combined 1-6-6. They're propping up the bottom of the Eastern Conference table, and both relinquished leads at the end at home this weekend. Columbus had a 2-0 lead to Chicago and tied 2-2. What is up with these two sides?
You know what? New York is not going to defend their Western Conference title. You can write that down now. I'm gonna make that stand. In words of one syllable, Columbus, no luck. New York, no good. That's my take on the team so far. I think New York is just a completely unstable, random morass of lineups 1 week to the next. If anything, Osorio, I was tickled by how he said the Open Cup play-in was crucial. I realized he had to get the stench of the DC loss out of the room. I mean, and Chet Messing's seen some horrible Metro Bulls game. So when he says that's the worst loss in that franchise's history, that's a mustache I listen to. As far as Columbus, they should not rely on excuses. They are the champions, but they do have some. Having a man down, they didn't see that coming. They really didn't. It was a stupid foul by Gino, and it looked like a legit red to me, let alone all the Jair Marufo, Cuauhtemoc Blanco shenanigans that Columbus seems to think happened. I think they were just beat. I think they just lost the lead. They lost 2-2. But it had to feel like a loss. But I don't think they're anywhere near as much in trouble as New York is. I think that's still a very solid team. It's a bad sign that they're dwelling on what the referee is doing with jerseys. But I think that's more easily reversible than what Osorio has gotten himself into.
You look at New York, and in 7 games, they have scored exactly 5 goals. Juan Pablo Angel has 2 of them, and they've got an own goal for them. So really, they've scored 4 goals in 7 games, half of them by arguably the best striker in the league, Juan Pablo Angel. And this is interesting. Of the 21 players that have played so far for Osorio, 19 different guys have started. It's just really a mismatch.
It is, and you can spin that as saying he's got some good bench players, or Bruce Arena left him some good bench players, and to a certain extent that's true. But it also means that a lot of the guys he has brought in to start and to help out Angel have not come through. What's troubling is that was just as true last year as it was going into this year. I think people saw the MLS Cup run and mistook that for reality. I think that's something that the Red Bulls need. They need to realize the regular season team is the real team.
And back to Columbus for a second. 7 goals in 6 games. 3 of those by the league MVP, Guillermo Barros-Skeloto. They're giving up goals, too. I mean, they've given up 11 goals in 6 games, and including the 2 demoralizing ones there. Do you think Varzija gets a long leash or what? I mean, he's a legend in Columbus.
That's why he gets a long leash. Columbus is historically the most patient of franchises.
Yeah, Greg Andrulis, pick up the white Curtis phone, please.
Exactly who I was thinking of. So it's incomprehensible to me that they would drop Varzija for a lot of unlucky losses. Now, it's true that bad teams' losses also can look unlucky, but I think before we say this is 2000 DC United, which they're starting to resemble a little bit, I think they need to get into a little bit of a groove. They had the part last year where New England, they got off to the good start. And then New England just completely passed them in the standings. I mean, it is a long season. And Columbus got their act back together and just became hands down one of the best teams, not just in league history. I don't think that goes away overnight.
Back to New York for just a second, and we may have touched on this before, but, you know, they're moving into a new yard next year. Some teams will take that as an opportunity for a fresh start or whatever. Does Osorio see out the year and then they get rid of him? Do they pull the trigger on getting him, you know, and potentially pay another coach not to coach? Or what do they do?
I don't know what the contract's like there. And that's – I don't think they want to go into the new stadium just under a complete radio silence cloud the way a lot of teams have done, the way I think Dallas did. The way I think Salt Lake did last year before Rio Tinto. I think they're seeing a lot of teams who have just tried to go in quiet to new stadiums and then get the excitement back in. I think with the New York market, they're going to be a lot more concerned about the perception of being a winner. I think they're going to be much more impatient with Osorio, even by that franchise's standards.
Well, if there's one thing we learned about Juan Carlos Osorio is that whoever negotiated his deal with Chicago was brilliant, enabling him to just walk away. I don't know if Red Bull was smart, they said, hey, wait a minute. And maybe they've got some protection in the deal. I don't know. But they need to get some wins, and they need to get some wins soon.
As far as New York, they're playing Los Angeles in Los Angeles this weekend. I think the losing coach should be fired. I don't know if he will be, but I think that's what should happen.
Topic 2.
Well, speaking of coaches and potentially being fired, another club whose manager is out is Toronto FC, but they are leading the East. Still, John Carver resigned this week, either under fire or under the stress of Major League Soccer's relentless meddling in his life and trying to keep a brother down. So, Dan, you blogged about this week. What are your thoughts on John Carver's departure?
I think he was fired. I think he was fired. I know that's not the official line. I know that's not what he's saying. I'm reading too much in between the lines, but Mo Johnston today, I think it was in the Toronto Star, he's saying, I'm not losing any sleep over this. And that's amazing to me that when your highly regarded first place team loses its popular coach and nah, we're good. We're fine. Cummins, you can take over. We're fine. I'm not losing any sleep. I don't get that unless this is one of those resignations where they put the gun to the guy's head and made him sign. And as far as Carver, he's been about John Carver first and everyone else second. He's just been completely unrealistic about being a – I don't know if he could handle the pressure of NCAA. The idea of him going to the premiership, the idea of him handling Newcastle.
Well, if he goes to Newcastle, he won't have to worry about the premiership.
That's not, they want to come back up. That's one of the richest clubs in Europe. You can't go into an underachieving rich team and expect it to be easier than Toronto with their three-year-old team. I don't know what goes on in John Carver's head, and I think MLS is glad. I don't think it's just MLS. I think Toronto, I think Mo Johnston is now glad that Carver's perception of reality is no longer his problem. I don't think anyone will ever come out and say that, but that's the vibe I'm getting. I think he was pushed.
Well, in the interview that I heard with him on 590 The Fan in Toronto, which, by the way, Samantha Harris asks tougher questions on Dancing with the Stars, he made a big thing about wanting to coach in the press box and the league telling him you can't coach in the press box, and that was the final straw. What do you make of that?
How is that the final straw of anything? First of all, how is that the biggest deal? How is that the deal breaker? Even if it is against the laws of the game, and I've read some of the blogs, some of the comments, I've looked it up, and between that and no other coach does it, and you do get a better view of the field from the press box. So the idea that no other coach in the world does this leads me to conclude it's a FIFA rule. So the idea that maybe Carver just thought he had really discovered the Northwest Passage and was going to redefine coaching and had all week was going to just, oh, I am going to be the master strategist. I'm going to take Toronto. We're going to win 20 games and I'm going to coach Chelsea. And then Don Garber tells him he has to coach on the sideline like a schnook. No, I still don't see it. I think he's just in a completely different world than what you want coaching MLS.
Well, that leads us to the discussion of foreign coaches who come here and find that it's not just a day at the beach for a lot of reasons. Soria might be one of those guys. Carver seems to definitely have been one of those guys. Rude Gullit seems to have been one of those guys. Is it just that Americans can coach well in this league and maybe the foreign player, a foreign coach isn't used to that?
The big towering exception is Steve Nichol. Until he writes a book saying that MLS is intolerable compared to what he's used to, a lot of these foreign coach complaints from Hewlett and Carver are going to ring pretty hollow.
Well, we asked Steve Nichol for comment, and he said,
Paul Mariner's not going to be any more articulate either when he finally takes over a team.
All right, last thing very quickly. Speaking of coaching, Jurgen Klinsmann fired by Bayern. Could we see him here? His name always comes up. He's kind of the Spetzel of the month in MLS. Could we see him on these shores?
He will be offered. You have to give him an offer if you're – I think if you're the Galaxy, despite Bruce Arena, you have to ask him. If you're Chivas USA, you have to ask him. I think Chivas USA should look into getting Martin Vazquez back, let alone Jurgen Klinsmann. He has got too good a resume. He has instant credibility, instant publicity for any team. It was like when Zidane retired and you had to give the guy a call. You just had to take the chance that maybe he would come in. New York should at least ask. He may not want to leave Southern California ever again. You have to ask him. And that's the effect that someone like Klinsmann, who's a famous player, a famous coach connected with American soccer, is going to do. He's going to make a lot of otherwise secure coaches have to worry about the ripple effect. I didn't even mention Bob Bradley, who shouldn't have to worry and now has to just because people put two and two together and because Bradley was the second choice a couple years ago. All this starts up again for Bob Bradley.
Two down, two to go. We're back after this to speak with Tim Holt, Vice President of the United Soccer Leagues. Don't go away. This is Four at the Back.
Would it be crazy if you packed your bags and left for a week, a month, a year? What if you left for 2 years? What if you were going far away to help in a village on the edge of the Gobi Desert? To spend time with people the rest of the world only reads about? To teach children and learn a thing or two about yourself? Would that be crazy? Peace Corps. Life is calling. How far will you go? To find out more, call 1-800-424-8580 or visit peacecorps.gov.
You are listening to Four at the Back with Dan and Ken.
We're back! Again, thanks to those of you who download us each week. Tell a friend, please. There may be some exciting developments on the horizon for the show down the road, but we got to keep building an audience. We need your help for that. More on that in the coming weeks.
Topic 3.
The professional divisions of the United Soccer Leagues have begun their seasons, and the PDL and W League teams will start playing over the course of the next week. Attention, of course, is drawn to USL 1, where three long-time and very strong clubs either have already left or they're scheduled to leave for Major League Soccer over the next couple of years. So I asked USL Vice President Tim Holt how he feels about losing Seattle, Portland, and Vancouver.
I don't think it's a good thing. It's a big challenge for us. I mean, specifically, and maybe exclusively at the USL 1 level, you know, obviously we're a more diversified overall business than that, but as it relates to USL 1 specifically, it's a big challenge. But it's not as if in most of these cases you have sort of outside, you know, third-party groups that are coming in and taking out a market. It's actually the owners of the USL 1 teams that are pursuing Major League Soccer. That's not a desirable situation for us. It doesn't help with the stability of the league. But we've got, you know, I think we don't look at it as, you know, no one's going to step in the way and say, no, this can't happen. They have, you know, they have a right to be able to do that. Our federation hasn't regulated that at all, whether they have a right to or not, is not something that, you know, I completely understand, but there's not a will to do that. So I think, you know, we can either sit around and say, well, you know, we're going to continue to have this can happen over time, or we can continue to try to evolve the business model in USL 1 and the overall model so that it's such a viable alternative to Major League Soccer that certain ownership groups would prefer to stay in USL 1 and be able to run their professional soccer franchise rather than be a part of the MLS model. Our models are very, very different. So when you're buying into something in Major League Soccer, which is very different, one could argue more ambitious, but also, you know, within our model, you have much more autonomy at the individual team level to sign players and sell players on and do things in the way that best fits in your individual market. There's not a right or wrong model. Our market's just a lot different, and we've got to make it so that the most ambitious soccer franchise owners or soccer team owners in North America not only want to join USL 1, but stay there for the long term, and we clearly haven't reached that point yet.
But you do have people, luckily, who are buying into the concept and adding teams in Austin and Tampa Bay and New York will come in next year. I'm sure you're not done with expansion either. So when you go out to, say, someone who's interested in a specific market, whether it's a USL 1 or USL 2, they seem to be, okay, yeah, this makes sense for me now, where maybe 10 years ago it didn't really make a lot of sense.
Yeah, I think that's right. I think, you know, the best markets for USL 1 to be in, you know, I think it's important to make the distinction that I'm not saying USL 1 should compete with Major League Soccer, either as a Division 1 professional league in this country or otherwise. You know, there's a significant gap at this particular point in time between the two leagues. So I'm not necessarily suggesting that, but as an alternative business model, that's a little bit different for professional soccer, and it's market-driven in a lot of cases. If you look at a market like Austin, that's a perfect USL 1 market. So somewhere sort of market size 20 through 50, not a market that MLS is likely to expand into anytime in the future, probably ever, with multiple teams in Texas already. So that's the type of market that we think for the long term is there. By the same token, we're not going to rule out great opportunities where we think all the pieces are in place in markets like New York. And New York's such a big market that there's really a couple of different markets within a market in New York. So especially while MLS is in this aggressive growth mode, for us to go into markets that are likely to be on their target screen within the next, you know, 4 to 6 years may not make sense. But, you know, we're gonna go out there and continue to look for the best groups in the best markets that fit us, in the right situation. So there continues to be, I would say, more interest in USL 1 now from significant groups than ever before, despite the economy, despite the fact that we've had, multiple groups that have moved to Major League Soccer here recently.
All right, pure speculation now. Where do you see in 10, 15 years out USL's place in the American soccer landscape, and how do you see American soccer looking? It's got to be very different 10, 15 years from now than it is today, because it's way different than it was 10, 15 years ago.
Yeah, it's a really good question, and you know, I'm guessing along with everywhere else. I think most organizations go through different phases, and you go through, you know, your infancy phase, and then your growth phase, and then your maturity phase. And I think we're just now embarking from a USL standpoint on the maturity phase of the business. I think we'll keep evaluating what leagues make sense and how they're broken up in the different categories. And we really have three categories. One, the professional soccer category, the developmental, senior developmental, which is the PDL and the W League, and then the youth. I think we'll still be in those three spaces, but we may have different league offerings within those spaces. That's the thing we'll have to continue to evaluate. I think that it won't be as dynamic a period of time as the previous 10 years have been. I don't think it's going to be static by any stretch of the imagination, but if you look at pro soccer between MLS and USL, if you look at youth soccer and everything else, we've had a really, really active 10 years that just makes it look so different. So I don't think 2019 will look as different from 2009 than 2009 looks from 1999, but we expect continued changes. Hopefully it'll be a year after we've hosted a World Cup or 3 years before we've hosted a World Cup. So that can be a game changer in a lot of ways in terms of bringing additional corporate interest and interest in the country if we're able to get a World Cup about the game. And I think that has the potential to be the biggest game changer over the next decade, you know, whether we get to the World Cup or not. And, you know, I have a lot of confidence that the people in the Federation will be on the right path and that we'll be able to enjoy hosting one of those. And we'll all be able to, you know, for all the different groups and people in soccer in this country will sort of be able to get behind that once again like they did in 94 and how important that was to where we are now.
That's Tim Holt, Vice President of the United Soccer League. He's one of my favorite guys in American soccer. Dan, what do you think about his take on where USL's going?
He sounds worried. He sounds like it is going to be a significant blow. I think he was sort of hoping that the entire Pacific Northwest wouldn't be gone within 3 years, especially in these tough economic times. I think focusing on places like Austin, what he called the metro markets in the 20s and below, that's minor league. There's just no nice way around it. And the audience for minor league soccer, it isn't just the markets, it's the players, it's the salaries, it's the quality of play, it's a lot of the things that MLS has to deal with among fans used to watching Premiership and stuff on television. That's an even tougher sell for USL. I don't envy them their task.
Topic 4.
And we're now a month into the first season of women's professional soccer. Los Angeles and Chicago seem to be the class of the league at the moment, while St. Louis is struggling just to find the back of the net. Dan, you've been to a couple of Sol games so far. I know you've watched some games, as I have. Early on, to me, it's a little pitchy, dog. The games are a little tough to watch. The soccer's still coming together, but that's just like in MLS in 96 and WSA in 2001. It's not an easy thing to do in this team game. Do you expect it to get better anytime soon?
By the end of the season, soon, yes. There are few enough teams with talented enough players. I think they make the adjustment a lot more quickly than MLS did, where it took the men's league something like 2 or 3 years to get more than about 3 or 4 watchable teams. The other thing is that right now, WPS really does, except for Germany, have the quality of players that they can say are world class. So I think that's going to help build teams a lot more quickly than what we saw in 1996. And then the transition got a lot easier with that wonderful 4-3 track meet shootout hatchet fight between Wambach and Milbritt and the Freedom and the Gold Prize. It was just nail biting stuff made possible by bad defense, by bad teams not gelling, but it was still incredibly exciting. So this is something that's going to make that growing pain much easier to deal with.
And so far the crowds aren't huge, but they're steady. Nobody's drawing 900 people to a game yet. I know that they're being, you know, relatively austere in their budget. So it looks for now, at least, I know it's early, as if all the seals are all holding. And so the investors have to be thinking, okay, we're still here.
The MARTA gamble and the FSC gamble has paid off to a large extent, and it's going to help them through what's going to be bad times. It's just like the USL. It's going to be very difficult to get people to believe in this league, even in the short term. So I think I have high hopes for this league. I'm happy that the crowds are doing better. Or doing better than the naysayers thought. I have high hopes for the quality of play. And I also have hopes that they're not just talking when they said they learned lessons from what happened to the WUSA.
Well, I got an email tonight that cracked me up. The subject line was, watch Wambach versus Solo on TV this weekend. Now, nowhere in the actual email from WPS did they explicitly play up the Abby Wambach versus Hope Solo storyline. But if you want compelling drama early on in a league for the audience that they're going after, this is it, right? 2 years after Beijing, this is what I think they need.
That, and it must have been very tempting for them to also put in Brianna Scurry, who didn't start against Bay Area, and probably, and then Washington gives up three goals. So it could be Solo against Scurry plus Wambach. I think St. Louis has to be extremely fired up for Hope Solo. Certainly she will be on a mission. It isn't Hope Solo's fault that St. Louis is at the bottom of the table. Yeah, it's not happy talk anymore. This is referring to one of the darkest times in U.S. women's soccer history, and they're trying to sell tickets and get ratings out of it. That's a very savvy, very gutsy kind of marketing that I'm not used to seeing from women's soccer, because the national team would never have touched such a thing.
Oh, we have some feedback this week. The first one was from a comment on my blog. Bevo says, I love your podcast because it makes me feel connected to MLS. I understand your budget constraints, but could you find someone other than Dan Loney? Did he attend the Jimmy Fallon School of Broadcasting? His jokes are lame and his arguments represent more opinion and less fact.
That's nitpicking, isn't it?
Dan, your response?
Yeah, shouldn't it be fewer facts, Bevo?
At two, Daniel.
That's why I'm here.
Exactly. First off, I wouldn't, Bevo, thanks for listening. Thanks for your post, for your comment. I wouldn't be doing this show without Dan, as far as he would have graduated from the Jimmy Fallon School of Broadcasting if the shop teacher wasn't such a liar. So he almost made it through. But the argument of opinion, in fact, you're basically a columnist, Dan. I mean, in this scenario, you're a columnist and you're about opinion and about eliciting an emotional response, right?
I would not insult journalists by saying I was a reporter. No, I my niche, my gist, my aim is very different. It's opinions about sports. There's only so many facts you can have, to be honest. There's a score, there's the stats, and all else is commentary.
There you go. Here's another one from Dave, and I believe Dave is in Atlanta. Good show, good commentary from both Dan and Ken. In mentioning USL and Atlanta in particular, which I guess we did last week, it could be said that Atlanta didn't so much die from lack of support as it committed suicide with a bunch of boneheaded decisions over the years, which in turn usually results in a lack of support. He says he thought the Ruckus / Silverbacks were resilient enough to continue on for a good long time, and sadly, I guess 15 seasons was a good long while. Again, good show. Keep up the great work. Atlanta, here's a situation where a USL team did build its own stadium. There were some issues apparently with location. Atlanta's a strange kind of a market, and apparently some of the amenities, I mean, apparently they still had portalettes, so it didn't go very well, put it that way. So Atlanta is no longer with us in USL. So I guess, you know, my point there, that USL teams need to build their own stadiums, I guess I should say they need to build them and do it right.
Well, this was another example where economic times plus the promise of MLS expansion, the Silverbacks could not fight both of those battles at once. I hope the Silverbacks come back quickly. I hope that's very rare among USL teams, but there's a world outside our window, and it's a world of dread and fear that USL teams have to avoid the clanging chimes of doom.
Nice.
I am ashamed of that.
Sticks with you. And finally, an email from Mitch. He says, I enjoy your podcast. I like it because it's on the line in between organized and unorganized. I think that's part of its charm as well. That's part of the design. You have it split into segments in a way, but it's also pretty freestyle, but you don't seem to go off on random wanderings like another podcast, which is actually done by friends of ours, so we won't mention that. I know some people have problems with Dan, but I, for one, think he does a great job. See, this proves there's balance in nature, Dan.
All my loyal fan base has come to defend me. Thanks, Mitch.
Mitch says the podcast is great, and I hope that you continue doing it. I know I will stay subscribed to it as long as you are still doing it. Well, thank you very much, Mitch. Thanks to everybody who takes the time to write in. You can send us your emails.
What's the email address?
The email address is podcast@ken.com. That's podcast@kenn.com. Send us an email. Comment on either my blog or Dan's blog on BigSoccer.com. Send us an MP3 file. Let us hear you. We'd love to have our first MP3 file sent to us. We appreciate your feedback. All right, Dan, final thoughts?
No.
Of course not. That's it for this week. We'll return next week with more stuff. Thanks for downloading For the Back.
Well, there it is. A match that had everything, and one that certainly lived up to its promise. It's only a pity that somebody usually has to lose. But there's always another day, another great match to be drawn, lost, or won, when we'll join you again...